Healthcare. We have a busy agenda today, and I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 399 with some promises to somebody that will explain it to us. Senator?
Thank you. With the chair's permission, may I bring cavalry to ride with me?
You can bring the cavalry and the artillery. I suspect we may have some folks in opposition to this.
May. And I hope to briefly touch on that in my testimony. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I am the senator from District 16. This issue was brought to me by a constituent, and since the time that she raised it with me, it has been very interesting to watch its evolution. I should tell you that the bill has been very warmly received in the Senate. It came out of committee unanimously. It had a unanimous floor vote with one no vote. That is a frequent voter of no over on the Senate side. And so,
can I guess?
Pardon me?
Should I guess?
No.
It starts with a B, right?
I would like to believe that it came as an almost unanimous out of the Senate. I have learned a great deal about the background on this bill, and I understand that you may have gotten a lot of negative email traffic on it. Let me just share with you, it is my belief at this juncture that the negative email has less to do with the practice of reflexology and the desire to have the practice of reflexology not controlled by the Board of Massage Therapists than it does by the desire of the Board of Massage Therapists to control everything. They have a bill that I think is so breathtakingly overreaching in its scope right now. They want to control everything short of the practice of law. And so this really is an agency control and, in my view, an agency overreaching. Reflexology is the manipulation of ears and feet to bring well-being. And I will leave it to practitioners to do the description because I'm afraid I won't do it justice. Many states, and I think that Ms. Rudnick, who is here with me, who's a practicing attorney, will help share with you the number of states that have exempted reflexology from the purview of the Board of Massage Control, I think we will demonstrate in testimony that there are no malpractice issues here, there are no patient safety issues here, nobody gets undressed. And that really what we're talking about is the Board of Massage Therapy putting up a valiant fight to try to keep reflexology within their purview. And from my study of the bill and my discussion with practitioners, there is really no reason why the practice of reflexology should be controlled as aggressively as the Board of Massage Therapy wants to. And so with that, I'm going to turn the microphone to Ms. Rudnick, who will provide you with a little bit of background. There are a number of people here prepared to testify for the bill, including a 30-year RN who practices in ICU and ER at Salem Hospital, and she has come over to talk about some of the medical elements. Ms. Rudnick is a lawyer. We have a number of other people here who can address specifics. Ms. Rudner is going to be the quarterback for our team, and as specific questions come up, she has a group of people with her prepared to answer all aspects of questions that you might raise. So with that, I would commend consideration of Senate Bill 399 to the committee. I hope after you hear the public testimony that you would be willing to entertain a work session and move the bill forward, particularly given the power that it came out of the Senate with. I hope that you would allow at least the debate to continue on the floor of the House. So with that, Mr. Chair, thank you, and I would introduce Ms. Rudnick.
Thank you, Coach. any questions of Senator Johnson? Go for it. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you. I'm Linda Rudnick. I'm a native Oregonian and have lived in Beaverton for the last 30 years. I have practiced law in Oregon for 28 years, and my specialty was catastrophic injury and death cases. And as a consequence, I became interested in some of what might be called the natural healing therapies because a variety of my clients, while they benefited greatly from the allopathic care they received, they benefited also from alternative care. Consequently, and actually, I started practicing reflexology on my family without formal training about 20 years ago, including my 92-year-old father-in-law, who's a retired lieutenant colonel in the Marine Corps, and have had superb results. And so I became really interested in reflexology, and when I think probably the internationally best-known teacher came to Astoria, Oregon, and started providing classes, that's Janice Robertson, I enrolled with some other people and attended her course and completed her course, and I found that, of course, very helpful as well. I went with Janice Robertson to the massage board back in December of last year, I believe it was, to have a meeting, which was quite amicable, with Patty Glenn at the massage board. And there was a great deal of consensus arrived at in that meeting, the foremost one being that everyone agreed that reflexology does not present a risk of physical harm to the recipient. And then the question became, and in fact, Ms. Glenn, and I've documented that in a letter that's attached to my, the testimony I provided to you includes my letter to you as well as my letter of December 15th to Patty Glenn. The question that was really addressed at that meeting was whether there needs to be special regulation of reflexologists independent of the regulation they receive as a business in the state of Oregon. In my legal career, I worked for Mick Gillette at the Consumer Protection Division of the Attorney General's Office while I was going through school, and I became fairly familiar with the good consumer advocacy that's available through that institution, which all businesses in Oregon are subject to. So reflexology is still regulated like any other business, but doesn't need a special health-related regulation such as massage therapists or allopaths or naturopaths and so forth. Anyway, the consensus was that there's no risk of harm to the recipient, and we made the argument, and that's why we've got Senate Bill 399 before you now, that there needs to be no special regulation of reflexologists. In fact, Janice Robertson's here today, and she can tell you that she's done a great deal of research about other states that have no specialized regulation. I believe there's 33 of them. And many of them have had this for years. Our sister state up in Washington has, I think it's been 3 years now, that they had no, have had been exempted by the massage board up there, and they've had a great result without any complaints. They have a mechanism, which I believe we do too, of allowing anyone who has a complaint to make their problems known to the health division. And thus far, I think it's been 3 years there, they've had no one complaining about any problems with reflexologists. If there are any complaints related to the business aspect of the practice, like gift certificates that are honored and those kind of things, the Attorney General's Office, Consumer Protection Division, is more than adequate to handle that. So that's basically what I've come here to tell you. Ms. Robertson can give you a lot more detail about the National Association. We do have a state chapter here. I don't know if you have any special questions that I could address.
Yes, sir. Representative Richardson?
Ms. Rudnick, just to make sure that I understand what's going on, if there are reflexologists that are doing this just on their own and they're not charging anything, they're not in business, is there any current restrictions against those folks?
Okay, I think you misunderstood. In fact, one of the people that's here with us is especially able to address the vocational value of having reflexologists not regulated by the massage board. The problem with regulation with the massage board, and you'll see in my letter to Patty Glenn, even she agreed that it was, quote, wrong regulation. The problem is that to be a reflexologist in the state of Oregon at this time, they claim that we need to be licensed massage therapist. To do that is approximately a $10,000 commitment in education on subjects that have nothing to do with reflexology. So, yeah. And so reflexologists want to practice here. They want to charge a reasonable rate. I think the going rate somewhere between $35 to $50 for a treatment. And there's a great vocational opportunity, especially in the non-metropolitan districts of the state, for people who have don't have many good opportunities other than perhaps hairdressing or massage therapy to become reflexologists. Plus, I think that it serves an excellent product to the consumer because it's a very effective treatment. It's one of the, haven't had time to read the opposing.
I'm with you.
Okay.
So is the real goal to have this, when it's a business, be regulated like any other business, but
exactly,
not have it be regulated as part of massage therapy?
Exactly.
Really what we're
that's
talking about.
That's exactly. The whole import of this bill.
So you're saying right now nobody can practice reflexology except LMTs?
Exactly, and the people who have tried have been fined thousands of dollars by the massage board and prosecuted.
Okay.
Even though they're totally qualified as reflexologists to do it.
What does totally qualified mean?
Well, okay, that's a good question. And I think there is no standards that have been set per se except by the National Association. And that the coursework that I took through Mrs. Robertson's program, I think, would totally qualify a person to do reflexology. The question is, could somebody who's book learned, and there's many good books on reflexology, be qualified to do it as well? I believe so. I think they would provide a better service if they had actually taken a certified course like Ms. Robertson's.
Or somebody with no training at all.
Somebody without any training in the standard way we think of it.
I mean, even a book training. I mean, could I
read a book?
Shingle tomorrow? No, not read a book.
Oh.
Just begin doing reflexology.
Well, I guess we don't think there's much risk of that, and there, in fact, in the real world, there hasn't been a problem like that. The 33 states that don't have the special regulations haven't had difficulty with people who haven't learned anything going out and holding themselves out as reflexologists. But should they do that, I still believe the Consumer Protection Division of the AG's office would be able to handle that. Plus, the
thank you, Mr. Chair. You asked the question I was going to ask.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I like to wait. Anybody else here serves on COTEC?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you might not be the right person to ask, but I'm looking at the ORS for the board.
Right.
And under what grounds do they...
Interesting you should ask that.
On what grounds would they go after reflexologists?
In the first place? Yeah, I wondered that myself. And so I went and checked the legislative history of the initial enacting legislation. It was back in the 50s. Reflexology was never mentioned, never contemplated, and I think from a legal standpoint was never intended to be under the purview of the massage board. In fact, they didn't do anything about reflexologists until, I'm going to say, the last 4 or 5 years that you start seeing prosecutions of people doing reflexology in their minutes. Why they suddenly started to go after reflexologists, I don't know. Turf war, I don't know why particularly. But the fact of the matter is they have. I, as an attorney, considered addressing this through the courts by challenging their ability to prosecute reflexologists, but that's so costly, and having it just flat out exempted was such a simple solution, as other states have done. So that's why we're here.
Mr. Chair, if I could amplify that just based on my knowledge of the other Senate bill that is proposed by the Board of Reflexology, they are interested in going after gymnastics, topical massage therapy, thank you, in a bill that they have pending on the Senate side, would have them going after the topical application of ointments, of hot and cold applications like that you would use on an athlete, of gymnastics. In my opinion, this is an agency with a very overreaching interest, and they are particularly interested in having the exercise of that overreachment in rule.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else?
And if any of the committee members would like to hear from Janice Robertson or the person who got interested in reflexology because of its great vocational opportunities, those people are both here as well as the ICU nurse. So we'll defer to the board's or to the committee's request. Just let us know if you'd like to hear more.
Well, first I think I would like to hear from Diana Nolt. Is that her now? Not? N-O-T-T.
Thank you.
Here to be in opposition, and then we'll see whether we need some more folks.
Hello.
Please introduce yourself.
I'm Diana Knott. I'm the law enforcement coordinator for the Oregon Board of Massage Therapists, and I am here on behalf of the board to address some concerns and to answer any questions that the committee might have.
More testimony?
I actually did have some comments, some explanation to the previous testimony.
Please.
After speaking with Patty Glenn, who is unfortunately not able to be here, she's on vacation at this time, she has stated that she didn't say that it was wrong regulation, but that we may not be testing for it appropriately, and that's something that the board has looked at, and that we are working with the Federation of State Massage Therapy Boards to address that concern. There are other professions that are allowed to practice reflexology. It's within the scope of practice of a chiropractor, a physical therapist, a naturopath, acupuncturist, so on and so forth. It used to be within the scope of practice of a nail technician to perform reflexology as well. But about 18 months ago, the lead investigator for the cosmetology board received a reflexology treatment and came back and spoke with the cosmetology board, and it was deemed that it is a treatment. It's not a beautification aspect, and it was removed from their scope of practice. The reason that reflexology is not specifically mentioned in the statute is that the board doesn't regulate individual modalities. There are literally hundreds of modalities of massage. The definition is applying pressure, friction, stroking, tapping, kneading, vibration by manual or mechanical means with or without lubricants, topical preparations. So that kind of encompasses that without having somebody come in and create their own line of body work while it's still technically massage, trying to get it exempted by saying, well, it's not called massage, so they don't go into regulating individual named modalities.
Other questions?
I have a question.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Knott. And I perhaps should have asked the other panel this question, but can you tell us what happens in reflexology? It's not like acupuncture where there's needles. Is it just like a rubbing or pulling or stretching or poking? I just kind of want to get a sense of what happens.
It's my understanding, and I do the investigative piece. I'm not the practitioner, but it's my understanding, having received a reflexology treatment or multiple reflexology treatments myself, that it applies pressure to parts of the body, which is why it then falls in the purview of massage. It's pressure, friction, stroking. Those are all parts of reflexology treatments that then cause a physiological effect to the body.
On the feet and the ears?
Feet, hands, and ears.
Thank you.
Are you planning on regulating erotic reflexology?
No, actually, that's one of the ways. We work with Portland Vice in trying to stop unlicensed practice of massage. If reflexology is unregulated, then the sex industry will advertise, as you can see by some of the documentation that I've provided you, as sensual or sexual reflexology, and we then have closed that loophole where we're not allowed. We wouldn't be able to go after them and work with Portland Vice like we do now. If you're familiar with Craigslist, they have a tremendous amount of postings that include the sex industry and with reflexology. I've worked with the investigator from the physical therapy board. They've also had the same problem. But because we're able to take action on these, on the little pieces, it slows that traffic down a little bit, and it also helps Portland Vice. We're able to provide some of that investigative service and to stop those so that they don't necessarily have to go through the whole investigation and sting operation per se. They just get the report and then they can appropriately go after those individuals.
Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Some of your written testimony, which I'm only had a chance to glance at briefly, might lead someone to conclude that we have a choice between either regulating reflexology through the massage board or it not being subject to regulation at all, when in fact, of course, all businesses in the state, consumers of all businesses in the state enjoy a certain amount of protection from our consumer regulation part of the government. And I guess I'm be interested in knowing, so from a business point of view, or if there was sexual mischief going on, you'd have criminal statutes to fall back on. So I guess I'm interested in what role the massage therapy board provides, what the point and purpose of the massage therapy board is as regarding businesses generally.
It's not our purview necessarily to take care of the business aspect. We do make sure that there are ethical guidelines that the practitioners are to follow. We have safety and sanitation guidelines and rules, which they are, again, also required to follow. It's similar to other healthcare regulatory agencies, as well as the health licensing agency and the standards that they have for their practitioners as well. In this particular bill is of great concern to the board based on what we've seen in the past. If you go through our minutes, you don't see anything where we have sanctioned anyone for reflexology per se. It's because it all falls within the definition of massage, they're sanctioned for practice, unlicensed practice of massage. We have had a licensed individual, and this is where a huge concern comes up with the board, who had a foot fetish, and his thing was to groom his clients and essentially kind of get in that way. We finally did have a client that was able to come to us. Very frequently when there's sexual violations, particularly when there's a grooming involved and there's been a long history with that practitioner, the victims don't often go to the police or to the authorities. They don't want to deal with the criminal aspect or the civil aspect. They feel like then they are put on trial, whereas with administrative law, we're able to do the hearings process where it's a little more comfortable for the victim. This particular practitioner, now former practitioner, is now not able to have access in the healthcare industry. A former LMT. If this bill passes, this particular practitioner will then be able to go out and practice reflexology, having a foot fetish, and potentially harm the public that way. That these are one of the concerns that we've got. Our sexual violations that we see aren't just strictly with massage and touching the naked body. We've had Thai massage sexual violations, which is where the client is fully dressed, chair massage. It's a matter of grooming and kind of
magic
coercing.
Using grooming?
It's a law enforcement term. It's where the perpetrator prepares the victim for the assault and the, at times, continued relationship in the case of child molestation. It's just a term that we use for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand the concern about inappropriate practices out there. What I'm struggling with is I'm not sure why the board feels that they currently have the authority to regulate reflexology as a modality. As you've said, it's a modality in other health practice. I mean, we could leading on what Representative Cannon was said, we could regulate reflexology through consumer and business services. If we define reflexology and someone's claiming to do it, I guess I don't see the way this is written, it says, as long as someone is not saying they're a massage therapist and all they're doing is reflexology, I don't understand why that would be an issue. You got to help me out here. Why, A, the board thinks it's their job to go after this, and B, why
it's
someone's
not
claiming to be an LMT, they wouldn't fall under this.
It's not what they call it. It's what they do. We don't regulate what they say. We regulate the practice that they do. If what they do is performing pressure, friction, stroking, tapping, kneading, vibration, stretching, then that falls within the definition of massage. If they're not, now if they're regulated in another field that allows that to be a part of their scope of practice, this board has no issue. We have had cross cases where someone has violated not only massage law but chiropractics or massage law and physical therapy, and we kind of piggyback the other agency as far as going after these individuals.
Did that answer your question?
No.
We need the statute.
Well, but I just looked at the board's statute, and I didn't see anything to that specificity. And so that's why, one, I'm concerned about why the board is feeling it's their role. But I'll take what you're saying. To me,
our statutory authority is ORS 687021-1 and 2A.
Well, I looked at it. I mean, reflexology, my understanding of it is it's essentially acupressure to certain parts of the body.
Correct.
So why doesn't the BME? They regulate acupuncturists. I mean, it's like, I just don't understand why it's the board of massage therapist's role, because if you're touching, so someone gets touched, it's therefore your role to regulate it?
Potentially. It depends on what they do with that touch. If they do chiropractic manipulations, then we would forward it to the chiropractic board. If that touch includes anything that would fall within the purview of the acupuncture board, we then forward it to the BME. The complaint.
No, we're not talking about complaints. We're talking about licensing. Right?
I just think it's interesting. You get all the complaints.
There's
a problem with the chiropractor. You go to the I don't know. This is...
It's shared. There's a lot of overlap of scope with massage therapy and physical therapy and chiropractics and other practices.
Oh,
so it's
boy,
a shared... it's a shared responsibility.
And right now, the only way somebody can do reflexology is to become an LMT?
Or an acupuncturist, an RN, chiropractor, any of those other licensed vocations where massage or items of massage are considered within their scope of practice.
So your argument is there is no independent occupation as reflexology.
At this point, no. It's considered massage, or it piggybacks with other professions.
Okay. Anything else? Everybody got all they want? Thank you very much. We have Marie Spencer, please.
And somebody in that.
Somebody else? All right. Why don't you join the panel? Please introduce yourself.
I'm Marie Spencer. I'm a registered nurse. I work at Salem Hospital, and I've been a nurse for 35 years. And my primary interest in getting interested in alternative complementary nursing, complementary modes of therapy that actually complement the Western model, which I was taught. Happened about 15 years ago when I started studying herbs and all the different modalities. What interested me in reflexology, however, was it seemed to be quite documented, quite ancient. It kind of merged the East and the West together. It would complement what I was doing at the hospital setting, although I cannot really practice it yet until it separates from the Board of Massage Therapy as it has in 33 other states. But what my reasoning, too, was I noticed in this hospital setting about 80% of the hospital's reasons people come to hospitals is because of the side effects of many of the medicines that they're on, the combinations of medicines, and that we really treat symptoms more than we treat the core issues. And what really excited me about reflexology is we were getting into the core issues and the rebalancing energy, rebalancing the person's energy field and their emotions and their the different body organs that the energy fields got clogged and just like the freeway, five cars trying to go the same direction. So anyway, what it really is in a half a minute or less, there are 7,000 nerve endings that end in the bottom of your feet. There are reflex points that you touch, as my teacher taught me, to touch with my thumb, push into the point, and then just gently massage it in a rotation manner, gently. And many times there's soreness and pain if that area of the body is blocked, energy blocked. there will be soreness and pain there, in which case I will gently just hold my thumb there and just for a few moments until that discomfort leaves. And what that really does is rebalancing the energy so the meridian lines of acupuncture, as you understand that, and acupressure, are now balanced and are going straight again instead of all clumped up. That's kind of the way I understand it. So, and it's really exciting for me to think about the aspects of being able to do that for my patients and adding to their therapy and their healing process and balancing them.
Would this not be in the scope of your nursing license?
Well, I've not checked into that thoroughly to see. It probably would be, since I am a registered nurse, and I do have a license to touch people. I'm just, you know, researching that myself to see whether I probably can, but I think that it's a wonderful profession for people that, you know, you don't have to have a lot of training. I mean, we're talking like 200 hours of training to be a reflexologist. You don't need, you're just working on one part of the body, not the entire body. And you're working with reflex points that are directly related to body organs, where massage is just a massage of muscle and fascia, which is wonderful. It feels wonderful. To me, there's no sexual connotation to working on the bottom of someone's foot with the reflexology. I don't know how they can get there with that. But I do if you do a whole body massage, maybe. But body massage is working more with muscles and fascia. This is working more with nerve endings and nerve reflex points that relate to specific body organs.
Great. Thank you.
I'm Janice Robertson. I've been a reflexologist for 27 years. I've been teaching for 25. It's a very old therapy. It was discovered and developed by the Chinese in 3000 BC. So it's been around for a long, long time. As my friend here said, it is pressure point treatment on the soles of the feet with the thumb, looking for painful points at the nerve endings. That tells you what part of the body is blocked. By putting pressure on those points with your thumb, it sends an electrical impulse up the nerve and removes the blockages, stimulating the body to heal itself. The body is a wonderful mechanism that just needs a little bit of stimulation to get on with the job by itself. We don't need to do a whole body massage course in order to apply pressure with the point of the thumb on the feet. Nothing that is taught in a massage course is of any use to a reflexologist, nothing at all. Well, reflexology was resuscitated in the West by an American physiotherapist called Eunice Ingham in Florida in the 1930s. And since then, it has spread all over the Western Hemisphere and has made terrific progress, except in America, because of the strangulation of all the massage boards. I taught in England for many years. I know the situation in Europe, and there is no restriction and no regulation of reflexology anywhere in the world. Certainly, it has no similarity to massage, body massage, and it would be considered ridiculous in any other country if a massage board tried to regulate reflexology. As regards reflexology in this country, it's been practiced now statewide for 17 years. There is the Reflexology Association of America, which oversees what is going on. 33 states now allow reflexology to be practiced as an independent therapy, and 17 of those states got their exemption from the massage board law in recent years, the last one being, well, not Washington, there were others after that. Not only that, but the American Massage Therapy Association, which is the National Massage Association, in 2003 circulated a directive to all their massage chapters in America, and therefore to AMTA Oregon, stating that certain therapies and modalities should be exempted from any future massage laws. They spell this out in their document, which I have here. And the first, clause 5 in there.
Who's document was?
This is the American Massage Therapy Association. Their exemption for reflexology states, persons who restrict their manipulation of the soft tissues of the human body to the hands, feet, or ears, and do not hold themselves out to be a massage therapist or do massage therapy. Since then, they have introduced new massage laws into Georgia, Indiana, and Oklahoma, and they have exempted reflexology and all the other natural therapies from those laws. So that is their policy, and therefore I don't know why the massage board doesn't go along with that policy, because this is their national association, the American Massage Therapy Association.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my question was how it might seem in the future that it might be necessary to have some kind of regulation in the sense that, you know, you become certified to be a reflexologist, but at this point it seems that other states aren't having any concerns, and I see the note from Washington, and could you speak to their experience mm-hmm. with the letter that you brought along?
From Washington? Mm-hmm. Well, Washington was exempted from the massage board in 2002 with the proviso that if there were any complaints, the Department of Health would step in and deal with those, and therefore the whole question would be reviewed again. But they have never had any complaints. None of the other states have ever either reported any complaints to the Reflexology Association of America. I also contacted the four biggest insurance companies that insure thousands of massage therapists and hundreds of reflexologists, because we do require insurance. And all of them have said, all four of them, two of them in writing, that they have never had a case of for malpractice against a reflexologist. Never. So we've never heard of such a problem. As for sexual connotations, we have never heard of anything like that. That is all in the massage area. It doesn't concern reflexology at all. And if massage therapists want to go in for foot fetishes, okay, we don't. Ours is a very serious therapy. It's to help people. It's to remove blockages in the body and stimulate the body to help itself. And this is what is being practiced worldwide right now without any problems.
Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have testimony in opposition that expresses concern that 40% of LMTs practice reflexology, and for certain patients at least, that would be covered by their insurance. So as proponents of reflexology, do you share this concern that there will be folks who are unable to get paid for by their insurance companies a service that they want?
Well, these insurance companies cover reflexologists, even if they're not LMTs. They do cover them. So if there was a case of case of malpractice brought against a reflexologist, it would be covered by the insurance.
Mr. Chair, if I may clarify, I'm thinking of the, and I think the case that the testimony is talking about is somebody who has insurance coverage, medical insurance coverage for massage therapy, and so they're able to go to a massage therapist, ask for reflexology, and get that covered. And their concern is then that if we deregulate reflexology, the insurance companies will use that as an excuse to drop reflexology.
No, the insurance companies already do cover hundreds of reflexologists who are not LMTs.
Okay.
Yes, they do.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
I have a question.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, but I also am not sure that I have the final answer to Representative Cannon's question that if I go to see a licensed massage therapist now, my own personal insurance, not the insurance of the LMT, but my personal insurance might cover that treatment if I get the treatment from an LMT, but will not cover the treatment if I get the treatment from a reflexologist, and then I'll have to pay out of my own pocket.
Yes. That is being considered right now by Washington, the CAM, which is the Complementary Alternative Medicines. It is being considered right now, and it will come about. I think it's going to happen probably by the end of this year or next year that reflexology will be covered by medical insurance.
Thank you. And my question, thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought it was very interesting that...
Feel lonesome all the way down there?
Yes. That Ms. Spencer actually expressly used the word massage when she was describing what happens to the bottoms of the foot.
Mm-hmm.
But my question to you, Ms. Robertson, is because there are all these nerve endings in the foot, what happens if you press too hard or press the wrong nerve ending?
You can't press the wrong nerve ending because they're all there in the feet. So when you give a treatment, you go over the whole foot millimeter by millimeter, testing all those nerve endings. So where there is a blockage in that nerve coming down from that part of the body, where there's a blockage, it'll feel tender there, and that'll tell you what part of the body it's coming from. But with the flat of your thumb then, by going over it like that and dispersing it, that helps to, it stimulates that part of the body to get working for itself. And it's very effective.
I understand that part, but what happens if you press the nerve ending too hard? Can it cause nerve damage?
Well, then the person will say, ow, and you'll go a bit lighter then. You can't do any harm with that. You'll just lighten your touch a bit. If you have a little thin, delicate foot in front of you, you'll use a very light touch. If you've got a footballer's 16-size foot, you have to use all your strength to get in there.
So, clarification?
So, I hope you get it.
Thank you. So you're saying that you can't hurt somebody, do
no.
you?
No, no, no.
Good. Thank you very much. Senator Johnson, would you like to come back?
May I bring Ms. Renick with just to speak?
No way.
No way?
You can bring anybody you want.
They're taking you seriously. I'm very respectful of the chair.
Right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to comment on a couple of the things that we've heard. First of all, I want to underscore the point that I think Representative Bonamici was driving at, and that is, what are the chances for medical malpractice here? I would submit to you they're virtually zero. We're talking about rubbing people's ears, their hands, and their feet. We're talking about right now in the board's interpretation, you have to have a full licensed massage therapist license. At thousands and thousands of hours and thousands of dollars, not thousands of hours, but a lot of hours and thousands of dollars. We're talking about the majority of other states who have freed reflexology out from under the purview of massage therapy. It's interesting in looking at Ms. Knott's testimony that she says at the bottom, and I'm reading, quote, reflexology, while ancient in practice, is a relative newcomer to the scene of healthcare, and to stunt that growth now would be a shame. I mean, this is from Ms. Knott's own written testimony, and I agree with her completely, and that's what Senate Bill 399 is about. We really see no possible medical malpractice claims. and would submit to you that this is just a chance to have practitioners out in a marketplace. The one other interesting thing that I think we as legislators see so often is the question of scope of practice, and this may be actually what we're talking about. In quickly reviewing the testimony provided by Ms. Knott, including an email from her husband in opposition, it talks about scope of practice. Deregulating the practice of reflexology may provide a few more jobs in the state, but it stands to harm the practice of about 40% of current massage therapists. So the question that I really have here is one, I think in scope of practice we may be talking about turf again, but what we're really talking about is an opportunity to allow this handful of practitioners that provide a service highly desired with no potential harm to practice unfettered by the need of these jaw-dropping requirements from the Board of Massage Therapy.
What I would like to respond to, Ms. Knott, you know, in all due respect to her, she wasn't at the meeting with Patty Glenn. The words wrong regulation were the words of Patty Glenn. She agreed that having the massage board regulate reflexologists is wrong regulation. I have written to her as of December 2006, and that's attached to my testimony here today. This is the letter I sent confirming what was said at that meeting. Ms. Knott wasn't there, so perhaps she didn't understand, but that was Ms. Glenn's term, and it is wrong regulation because they're very different body works, entirely different. To respond to Representative Bonamici's questions, one thing that I think is helpful to know is when I was trained by Mrs. Robertson to do reflexology, we're trained to stimulate every one of the reflex points in the foot. So there's no wrong stimulation in the sense that you get the wrong reflex point. You go through the entire body to stimulate it. If it's out of balance, that's when you might feel a thickening in the foot or there'll be a soreness. But that's why the other thing that's the point number two in that letter to that Ms. Glenn herself agreed is there is no risk of bodily harm to the public by receiving this kind of treatment. That's critical. I mean, there certainly is a risk in allopathy or chiropractic or naturopathy. This is entirely different. It's a natural therapy. And, you know, you may be hearing from other natural therapists down the road, depending on how broad the net is that the massage board casts, because there's a lot of natural therapies practiced out there. One final point I wanted to make, and I find this is very telling. I actually read through 5 years of minutes of the massage board to find out about where reflexology ever fit into this. And I had to go back about 5 years' worth, and there was no mention of reflexology for a couple years. What's interesting to me is every single mention of reflexology in their minutes, if there's a prosecution, it has nothing to do with bad behavior or bad practice by the reflexologist. It's simply over the fact that they're practicing without an LMT. So this is a turf war. That's what it's all about. And it's unfortunate that in our state there are so many people that can be trained and work and make a livelihood doing this important public service, in my view, and aren't allowed to without going through thousands and thousands of dollars of education and training that's irrelevant to what they do. So unless there's other questions, there was one other comment that I was going to remark upon, which was the question is, are we going to need our own independent board down the road? The way we've set this up so that we'll know is to have there be the ability to have complaints made to the health division if there are problems. From our perspective, if there aren't problems, we don't need to have a special board, and we're anticipating that we won't, only based on what the other states have experienced themselves.
Where has that been set up?
I believe that's... I think what we decided upon was the Consumer Protection Division as being our source to find out if there's complaints. It was the state of Washington that had It was the state of Washington that had a health division direct complaint system, and they've received no complaints over 3 years.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Let me close the public hearing and open up a work session on SB 399 for some discussion in the committee, if committee members would like to.
I'd like to discuss.
Go for it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wow, what an interesting issue. I agree with the premise that reflexologists are wrongly regulated by the Board of Massage Therapists. That I agree with, because I don't think that they need all of the training to have massage. However, what concerns me is the fact that if this bill passes tomorrow, you or I or anybody could just go out and hang up a shingle that says, I'm a reflexologist, and I can make you better.
You'd have to declare a conflict of interest if you plan on doing that.
So that's my concern. I don't have any problem with taking them out of the massage therapist, because I don't think that's where they belong. But leaving them without anything concerns me. And I don't have DCBS in here telling me we're going to take these calls, or how are people going to know if they go to somebody who's a reflexologist and say, well, you promised me that I'd get better and now my foot really hurts, or you promised me I'd get better and now I don't. How do they know who to call? There's no disclosure requirement. There's no information. It seems to me that there's a big gap, because I think I saw in here the suggestion that somebody wants to cut your hair, they have to have a license. And that, to me, if somebody's pushing on your nerve endings, it's a health issue. And like I said, I don't think they need the whole LMT training, but to have them out there with nothing concerns me.
I'm not going to tell you that a bad haircut is a real issue with me. Representative Mara, I don't mean to make light of this.
I remain relatively silent, actually pretty silent on this issue, but I guess the questions for me is, there's a lot of things that in society are purported to deal with health, and they're not regulated at all. And, you know, you can go down to any natural food store, and there's claims that if you ingest this product, you're going to feel better, it's going to help cure your whatever. And they always will caveat, or usually caveat it, and say, not approved, this statement is not approved by the FDA. And I'm putting this into that same area, but this doesn't prohibit an LMT from practicing reflexology. This says somebody that's a reflexologist is not regulated by this board, and I think the risk is non-existent. And I absolutely have no problem with this piece of legislation. And if it becomes an issue that we need to create a board for reflexologists, then we can address that. But this language is, all it is saying is that reflexology is not under the auspices of the Board of Massage Therapy, period. I mean, if they create a health hazard, then there are other ways to deal with it rather than through this board. So I'm comfortable with the language of this bill.
Senator Flores?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would concur with Representative Maurer, and I guess I'm somewhat bemused only in the context of, we're actually giving so much time to this something which I don't feel needs to have the level of regulation that the massage board is suggesting.
Yes.
And there are probably issues that we have dealt given less time, so that's my only bemusement. And so I don't have any problem. And if I'm reflecting correctly, I think I've seen the colored hand that has the various points over the bottom of the foot. And can I just kind of reiterate my my offer to have a demonstration if you want to?
Not if it costs more than $10.
That's right. That's right. Can I have a $9.99 demonstration? But I don't have any problem with passing this bill.
Are there any other comments? Well, we have a work session. Let's take a motion.
Move Senate Bill 399 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Is there any more discussion? Erin, would you call the roll?
Representative Watkins. Aye, hesitantly.
Representative Bruin.
Excuse.
Representative Kim.
Aye.
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Gelson.
excused.
Meta Dollar.
Aye.
Vice
Chair
Booker.
Aye.
Vice Chair Booker. Aye. Aye. SB 399 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Do I have a volunteer for carrying it? I'll carry it.
And will you just acknowledge that packet?
Oh, by individuals?
You can just say there are nine pieces of
opposing. There are nine pieces of opposing testimony to SB 399, and we'll put those into the record.
And, Mr. Chair, when you do carry it, if you want to do a visual aid, remember my offer.
I think that's a great idea. Last time I used an auditory and a visual, so you get somebody else on the floor. But I could maybe do the demonstration. Well, maybe that wouldn't work.
I'll wear my sweats that
way. I close the work session on HB 399.
Thank you.
And thank you all for your testimony. Let's open a work session on, a public hearing on Senate Bill 341A. Are we going to invite somebody else to join us on this?
If we can get started, we'll get done, my commission.
Well, Aaron, will you see if you can get Senator Moniz? She's
already
on.
Popped out.
Okay. Is there anybody else here? Is this what you're here for as well? You want to testify, and then when the senators show up, you can get out of the way? Dr. Higginson?
And Mike Seeley. Oh,
hi. Mike.
Chair Greenlake and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dr. Grant Higginson, Administrator of the Office of Community Health and Health Planning, State Public Health Division, Department of Human Services, and with your permission, I would like to give the mic over to Mr. Seeley, who I think is actually more involved with the aspects of the bill, and I think that would be a better place to start.
If you also tell us, Mr. Seeley, how this relates to the other things we've already dealt with.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Mike Seeley. I'm the Executive Director of the Pacific Northwest Transplant Bank, the Oregon Procurement Organization serving Oregon, Washington, and southwestern Idaho.
Can you just excuse me for a moment? Let's
great.
Senator Moniz join us and Senator Walker if she gets here. Senator, this is turned about as fair play.
That's right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill, allowing me to speak for it. Let me gather my thoughts real quick. I'm not sure what's already been said. Okay. Basically, Senate Bill 341 requires that tissue or organ transplants must take place in an accredited health care facility, and that the agencies that deal with tissue and organ transplants must also register with the Department of Human Services, who will adopt rules to establish civil penalties. What the reason this came to mind was there was a student, or actually a 24-year-old male, that when it had some tissue put into his knee, I believe it was, and it did come from a cadaver, and it was not properly regulated, and it did have infection in it, and the young man died. And so this has never happened in Oregon. This is truly a preventative bill, and because when we were starting to talk to Department of Human Services, thank you. There was no regulation for eye banks or tissue banks here in the state of Oregon, and we feel they did not know how many banks there were, and so this is supposed to be just that if they deal with tissue, that they just need to register with the Department of Human Services. And I'll let Senator Walker continue on while I find the rest of my testimony.
Thank you.
What,
What we'll do, when Senator Wharf is done with this, we'll gavel out of here and let you speak on the other bill you're responsible
for. Okay, terrific.
Thank you,
yeah, and I've got a scoot. I've got to get back to Eugene tonight. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This bill came to my attention, or this issue came to my attention. Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7. Thank you. In June of 2006, when I read a very lengthy Associated Press article about the body part business, and it was quite frightening. So I contacted Senator Monica Anderson. I was kind of busy in the interim. And so I asked Senator Monica Anderson to follow up and draft a bill, and she kept me in the loop. What was frightening about it is there is no real there's no real uniform system to trace tissue. And I could give you all kinds of gross horror stories. People have died. People have become infected to levels that they lose function of certain parts of their body. Things have happened to a lot of people because they have used tissue that has not gone through a tissue bank. Quite frankly, the federal government has failed here. They fail in a lot of ways. This one, they have failed at miserably. And so it's important for Oregon to take a step forward and protect its citizens, because we use a lot of tissue in different operations and surgeries in the state of Oregon. We use a lot of cadaver tissue. And unless you have some kind of uniform system where you protect people's safety and the health and safety of Oregonians, we're going to get lots of problems like you have seen with people who have died from tissue that has sat around and not been refrigerated. It's come from infected cadavers. I mean, there are all kinds of things that have happened, and it was a three-month investigation by the Associated Press. It's sent home to me the message as to why we need a free and independent media, because they help us determine these things that are wrong. But you know, this is an area that Oregon can step out and be in front of anyone else across the country. The Senate passed this bill 29-1. Quite frankly, I'm not sure why Senator Whitsitt voted no, but it doesn't matter. It got across the Senate floor 29-1 because people see this as a real issue for Oregonians to protect those of us who go into our hospitals and our surgery centers expecting to come out alive and better than when we went in. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Can I ask Mr. Seeley, while you're both here, we sent two bills over to you in this issue, and perhaps Mr. Seeley can tell us how the three bills relate to each other.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the connecting the dots between or among the three bills I think we've seen are actually four that would include 2927, which 2927 is a measure to form a task force on the larger view of looking at these issues productively and constructively with the right people at the table, probably has the greatest relationship to this bill. The other two bills have more to do with the act of the public's ability to donate. 3092 is a Uniform Anatomical Gift Act, and that's the most recent one we've discussed here in your committees. This is a proactive approach that I agree with what's been said. In fact, the incidences just referred to are the result of, in many cases, fraud, manipulation of the system. And the bill, as amended, calls for organ procurement organizations, tissue bank, and iBanks to provide documentation of their federal oversight to the Department of Human Services. I think that's an excellent idea. It goes towards protecting the public. The public trust is intact, and it's about transparency. We, speaking on behalf of the Oregon Procurement Organization, welcome this. It's very doable. It's not a burden. It requires that any transplant center or any healthcare facility that performs organ transplants has to be a part of the Oregon Procurement Transplant Network, as federally designated by the Transplant Act of 1984, which is the reality. That's the case with organ transplantation, and every organ that's recovered for transplant is tracked. There's a great deal of documentation that we're responsible for. This takes a step further with regard to tissue transplantation, requiring that any organization that's going to provide tissue or cornea in our state needs to be FDA regulated and registered and regulated. It also requires that hospitals using those tissues or any healthcare facility using that, they can only obtain them from an FDA regulated and registered organization. I don't believe that we see a lot of examples of legislation like this around the country, and I for one, have having dealt with many of these issues, because whenever there's an issue untoward towards the public related to tissue, through your call, I always get called, or our organization gets called, because the public identifies organ donation as the focus of public attention. And this is an effort, I think, to close some loopholes that could exist, and we're being proactive here by with this bill. So I'm here in support of it as amended.
Let's get to some questions. But would you like to make a statement on
SCI
24? No.
Okay. I just wanted to follow up here, too, on this particular issue. I think that your House Bill 2927, which has the task force, I think that is an extremely important bill, because in talking with the Department of Human Services, there are really a lot of issues that aren't receiving adequate oversight due to the limited funding. And, for example, the majority of the 11 licensing and certification programs that have survey inspections, they're limited to every 6 to 8 years. And so, in a sense, we need to be looking at all of the regulatory functions, rather than doing it piecemeal. But this is extremely important, I believe, because the cartilage that was put into this young man was supposed to be disinfected and perfectly safe, but he wasn't. And it had come actually from a corpse that sat unrefrigerated for 19 hours. And so the cartilage actually hadn't been adequately treated to kill the bacteria. So there, I know the standards that we have here, what Mr. Seeley's talking about, are extremely high standards, but this is a big business, a $1 million business, tissue. And when you read about what's happening in third world countries and the types of tissue that's coming out of China, this is just, I think, precautionary and I think very much needed. So that's really all I wanted to say about this bill.
If you'd like to make a comment on 24, I'll open the public hearing.
All right. Okay, Mr. Chair, if you have no other questions, I need to scoot down the road.
Are there other questions, Senator Walker? No, we'll be back with...
Okay, well, perhaps Senator Mona Sanderson can answer.
One strike.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, do I understand correctly that there have been no reports of the nature that, Senator Walker, you indicated were reported in the AP story? Is that correct here in Oregon?
The Safety Commission, I'm not sure if the Safety Commission is looking at tissue donations, if they've gotten that far yet or not. But as far as I know, no.
Follow up? Thank you. And then the young person that you had referred to with the knee cartilage that was bad, was
he was from the Midwest.
He was from the Midwest.
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, just one perhaps clarifying comment on 2927, which you now have. I believe we amended that bill so that that task force would focus exclusively on non-transplantable organs. You may want to look at whether a broader non-transplantable parts, I guess. I don't know that we even said organs.
Tissue organs.
Yeah, maybe tissues or organs. But you may want to look at a broader issue. We were focused, at Mr. Seeley's recommendation, on non-transplantable gifts for convention, you know, things that were being used for displays at conventions or other purposes.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cannon, indeed, there is a domain here that is not adequately regulated, and that is the donation for research. and it's not covered by any federal entity. I had the opportunity to serve on the Federal Oversight Committee on Transplant Policy, and we brought it before Ruth Solomon of the FDA, and they kind of backed away because it's not implanted in someone. But the concern there is this thin veil that could exist of impropriety, and we want to make sure that these domains are well-defined and that at some point it would be fantastic for Oregon to be cutting edge and have some type of oversight. I'd like to see the federal government do what they did with the FDA-regulated tissue banking for transplant and for organs. That would be ideal. Then we could adopt our own, you know, additional standards within the state. But that's an area that does need attention, and the committee that could be formed as a task force would be key to looking at that issue. And we could talk about the broader issue so as to make sure we have all these dots connected, if that makes sense.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and once again, either senators. I'm noting that it says there's a minimal fiscal impact, so there was no impact statement issued. However, the Department of Human Services is tasked with adopting rule by standards, system of registration and monitoring, and then imposing penalties. So was there any discussion about what that might involve as far as cost?
Mr. Chair, Representative Flores, I think Dr. Higginson can probably answer that question better than we can.
You can head south.
And I can head south. Thank you. And, you know, I just would say that donated cadaver tissue is used in more than a million procedures each year and is life-saving for many people. And I think it is important for us to be proactive. We shouldn't have to wait for a leaky FedEx box like we did with Mr. Philip Joe Guyette Jr., who was running this operation where he was engaging in fraudulent activity and using embezzling money from sales of corpses and giving his or selling his parts to folks who were unsuspecting. So I think it's better to be proactive in Oregon rather than wait for the worst thing to happen. I would hate to have to lose my son, like this young man, Brian Lycan of Minnesota, who just simply went in to have his knee fixed, and only to find out that it was because Oregon had not taken a proactive stand on protecting our citizens who go into the hospital for surgery.
Senator Walker, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Dr. Higginson, would you like to rejoin us? And while we do, let me open a public hearing. I won't close this one. Open a public hearing on SJR 24 and invite Senator Monica Anderson.
Thank you. SJR 24 acknowledges that this legislative assembly is committed to supporting the targeted investment in healthcare educational programs for which we will actively encourage local and regional cooperation of workforce investment boards to address the challenge of a workforce shortage. The bottom line is that this state has to recognize the importance of growing Oregon's healthcare workforce to really ensure a sound and economic and healthcare policy. So I can go into more details on this. The Oregon Employment Department projects the need for 59,000 new healthcare workers to fill the industry's projected job openings by 2014. And there is, and I believe this is an underestimation since many of the future healthcare jobs are yet to be defined in diagnostics and therapeutics and information technology. And there'll be a significant shortage in nursing, and you'll hear about another bill, Senate Bill 4. Actually, I believe that's in Ways and Means, which is also dealing with the health care shortage. And if you look at comparing the governor's budget with the co-chair's budget, the co-chair's budget has had a significant disinvestment in the workforce shortage, but this is a resolution that says that we are committed. We know that in order to meet the healthcare needs of especially we baby boomers that are getting to that age, that we truly need to grow the healthcare industry.
Yes, are there questions? If you'd like to hang around, we'll do both of these.
Okay.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank the senator. I'm on this bill as one of the
co-sponsors, but I haven't had a chance to say how much I appreciate item 4 on line 27 around TANF participants. One of the things we're hoping to do with the redesign of the TANF program is to make sure that vocational education opportunities for post-secondary education are available to help individuals getting into the healthcare field. So thank you for putting that in.
Other questions? Let's close the public hearing on SJR 24 and finish up on 341.
Are you done with your testimony? I've been interrupting you so much, I don't know.
I provided you with my written testimony. I think I got most of it in, and certainly open to any questions.
The question is that if there's millions of tissue transactions taking place all across the country, and that the concerns that we have are related to an AP story of what may have happened, what happened in the Midwest, and we have no known problems in Oregon, and there's been no discussion about what the burdens or costs might be of requiring registration, and reporting, and all of these other things. Are we coming up with a solution that's looking for a problem? Because in everything, I mean, if we were talking about knee transplant, where there's somebody that's died because of a reaction to that, and so we could say, we got to be careful about knee transplants because somebody died in the Midwest from it. And there's always going to be those kinds of things. Kids get killed on bicycles, and so we got to do something about bicycles.
Make more helmets.
Kids fall down in showers, and so we need to have helmets for the showers. Anyway, point is, is this something that we really need to act on for Oregon just because we can?
That's a good question.
Yes, Senator Greenlake and Vice Chair.
Excuse me.
Chair Greenlake and Vice Chair Richardson. The fiscal impact, and Representative Flores as well, the fiscal impact we estimate would be less than $10,000, and this is something that we can pick up within existing resources. One of the things that I think is a very nice part about the bill is that, as you've heard from Mr. Seeley, there is good federal oversight over these organizations and tissue banks already. And so all that we're really doing here is requiring that anyone that is going to be providing those services in Oregon follow those federal guidelines and regulations that they should be. The only thing that we'll be doing is setting up a registration system, and this is going to be for a handful of healthcare organizations so that we know that they're in the state providing the service, that we know that they are certified by these federal regulations, and then if they are doing things that are outside of those regulations, then we have the authority to give them a civil penalty. And so really our involvement is minimal. We are not creating any duplicative regulatory systems over these agencies, simply making sure that they follow the national guidelines and regulations.
Quick follow-up. I feel better to know that's not going to be a huge burden for the agency. What will be the burden for the businesses to now have to deal with the agency?
And Chairman Greenlake, Vice Chair Richardson, I don't see it as a burden at all. Frankly, we go through a rigorous process with the Centers for Medicare Services, the Health Resources Services Administration under HHS. We're subject to our participation, speaking of Oregon agency, with the Oregon Procurement Transplant Network. It's rigorous. So simply to transfer our designation by the Secretary of Health and Human Services to the agency, to me, is straightforward. My colleagues in the tissue banking organizations, of which there are two, we're very fortunate in Oregon, in that whereas Oregon agencies, there can only be one by federal law. With tissue banks, you could have any number that could set up. We have enjoyed here, I've been here 17 years, and it continues, that we have one tissue organization for tissues for transplantation and one eye bank, the Lions Eye Bank. Both of my colleagues there are supportive of this measure and feel that this is really not a huge burden. They go through a rigorous FDA inspection. We also have accreditation standards that we meet that are voluntary, that are rigorous, so we would like to provide that to the department as well.
Thank you.
Representative Kotek and Representative Mao.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment, and I think Mr. Higginson captured this. It's, if you're a healthcare facility in the state, you're going to use organs or tissues from FDA regulated places, which is a good thing. And I think just asking people to let us know they're doing it is also, it seems pretty simple. So thank you for your summary of that.
Senator Mao.
This is a comment. First off, Mr. Seeley, this is the third time I believe you've testified in front of this committee, and I have appreciated your testimony each and every time.
Thank you, sir.
And I want to say that, you know, is this an issue of us or a solution in search of a problem? And I think it's addressed that this is, we are out in front, and that we are using transplanted organs and tissues at a greater rate each and every year, and because of the technology and the science behind it is becoming more, what would be the right word? Is that we are becoming more advanced. And so I look at this as, this is a time where government needs to be out in front as opposed to wait for all the problems to occur. And Oregon, it seems to me, is there anyway, but it's just, this is a good thing. We're not creating a new system, we're just enhancing what we have. And I remember back in the mid 80s, when I flew helicopters, we used to fly body parts from the hinterlands of Kansas to Topeka and to Kansas City, and most of the time they were eyeballs, but anyway.
Two ex-helicopter jocks on this committee?
Yes. And I'm not sure where these things came from, and I'm not quite sure where they went, but I know I transported a lot of them, and I'm glad that we've got people like Mr. Seeley out there advocating for us in these issues, because quite frankly, you don't know where this stuff comes from as a patient. And you just hope that the system is seamless. And hopefully this continues in that whole realm of attempting to keep a seamless system.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Let's close the public hearing on HB 3. Senate Bill 341, and open a work session on Senate Bill 341. Can I have a motion on 341?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 341 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Is there any discussion?
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just this could be just a drafting concern of mine. On the first page, on line 16 and 17, there's the sentence that tissue banks and eye banks must be registered with and regulated by the U.S. FDA. And I just want to clarify for the record that I'm reading that as, in order to do business in the state of Oregon, which is actually, I think, taken care of on the second page. I don't think we can pronounce that a tissue and eye bank has to be regulated by the U.S. FDA. So I'm kind of reading that into the bill and wanted to clarify that. I'm assuming that's what that means.
Maybe we can take a conceptual amendment that would add those words. That. What do you think?
Well, I think it's...
I mean, it's one would improve that, but...
Right. Well,
I don't see anything that...
And I think when you turn it over and you look at Section 2, when it's talking about how DHS is going to adopt these rules and with a registration, and they're saying that they have to provide the documentation of their requirements under federal law, it's just an awkward statement on that, the way it's drafted.
I'm wondering if I might, Mr. Chair, that is number two, and the number one is back with Section 1, as used in this section and Section 2 of this 2007 Act, A, B, C, D, E, and 2, and it gives definitions under it. Number 2, the declaration that tissue banks and eye banks must be registered, and I don't know necessarily that that's a determination that it must be done by our legislature, but a statement of what is encompassed here.
I mean, is that a true statement in its own right?
Chairman Greenlick, Representative Flores, the FDA, it is a national requirement that if you're going to operated tissue bank. Those tissues are then used for transplantation, or an eye bank. You have to be registered and regulated by the FDA.
So this is a definitional statement.
Yes.
More like a whereas.
Yeah.
It's the two of number one. Number one are the definitions. Number two is a statement of fact. Not a legislative fiat.
No, it's a statement of fact, and it goes a step further to say that it directs the hospitals what they have to do.
It's not written as a whereas clause, but that's the way you're...
Mr. Chair, wouldn't the same be true of 3 and 4 as well, the rest of Section 1? Is that not all also...
Must a healthcare facility that performs urban organ transplants?
They're almost like findings or whereas.
Correct. In order for any hospital in the United States to perform an organ transplant, they have to be a member of the regulated by HRSA and a member of the OPTN, as directed by the Federal Transplant Act of 1984.
So these are all definitional, and Section 2 is the action statement.
That's my understanding.
All right. We feel comfortable with that construction.
I had exactly the same reaction.
As long
reaction.
As it's clarified that it's not written as a finding.
Yeah, we're not doing that. Somebody else has done it.
Okay. Can I do have a motion on the floor. Is that right? Is there any other discussion? Would you call the roll, please?
Aye.
Senator
Brooks. Why don't you?
Aye.
Senator Flores.
Aye.
Representative
Gelser
excused.
Representative
Maurer.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Brooks.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Brooks. Aye. Senate Bill 341 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Maurer, would you like to carry that? Is Donna Sanders still here?
No,
well, let's do it anyway. We had a public hearing on SJR 24. Let's open a work session on SJR 24. Any discussion on the part of the committee?
No.
Nope. Still have a quorum. Okay. Can I have a motion on Senate Joint Resolution 24?
Mr. Chair, I move SJR 24 to the floor of due pass recommendation.
Is there any discussion? Aaron, would you call the roll? Let's let Representative Forte join us. Representative Gelser's on this. Do you think we might? I think she might. She's in C. Can we stand at ease for a moment? See if she'd like to vote on this.
Ready?
SJR 24 passes. You feel comfortable with this on a consent calendar, or do we want to have discussion on the floor on this?
Mr. Chair, I would move.
You feel okay with that? All right.
Mm-hmm. SJR 24 to the consent calendar.
Mr. Chair?
Yep.
As a latecomer.
No, it's here.
I'm just wondering, since the purpose of the bill is to recognize the importance of healthcare workers, if it might not make sense to say that we recognize the importance of healthcare workers on the floor.
Would you like to carry it?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm withdrawing that motion.
Yeah, the motion is gone. Representative Gelser will carry it. You want to stay with us a while, or are you going to go back? You're having so much fun now.
Less lonely down here.
Okay. Well, maybe we can get both of them. Do we have a lot of testimony on either one?
I think we've only got one person on.
Okay. Let me open a public hearing on SB 879A. Who's going to testify on that?
I'll give you just a briefing. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 879 is requiring the pain management...
You should nudge me.
The Pain Management Commission to review pain management component of the curriculum for certain educational institutions. It eliminates the responsibility of the commission to develop pain management program for providers. It does add dentists, occupational therapists, and physical therapists to the list of persons to be considered for membership on the commission. And it requires dentists, occupational therapists, physical therapists to complete a pain management education course. Left the Senate floor with 25 ayes, 3 noes, and 2 excused. Does not have a revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact statement, but there is no statement issued. Does not have any subsequent referrals.
Who are we going to hear from on this?
Kathy Hahn from the Oregon Pain Commission, Mr. Chair.
I'm Kathy Hahn, Chair of the Pain Commission. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for hearing this. I have to apologize first I have talked to some of you at times, and it seems that we have had we've done a bad job of introducing ourselves to the House side. And I have at times given updates to the Senate side, and it occurs to me that I should be doing this over here too. So maybe at some point we'll put something together, because we are a commission that has been created to inform you of what's going on with our activities in trying to figure out what's going on in the state as far as pain management and improving things, and it is our charge to inform you. So we'll try to do a better job of that in the future. Senate Bill 879 is just about kind of a cleanup bill. The Oregon Statute 409 that created us, what we're doing is deleting some language that really doesn't seem to fit. So in our cleanup, we're taking the pain management practice program for providers out, because we feel it is beyond our scope. So we're just taking that out. And we would also like to add something that allows us to monitor and review curriculum of all of the state's educational institutions, healthcare institutions, and in pain management, to be able to further follow what's going on with pain management education. If you recall, we have a continuing education piece, mandatory, of 7 hours for various healthcare practitioners. And once that's done, it's a one-time thing. Once it's done, we're trying to figure out how to make sure that we have quality education going on. We also originally forgot to add occupational therapists, physical therapists, and dentists to our mandatory continuing education. So that's part of the cleanup bill, is to add those people. And that's it.
Other questions?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Is this proposing to amend language that was adopted in 1999 when the Pain Commission was created by the legislature?
Yes.
Is that when this statute dates to 1999?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Cannon, yes. Yes,
Mr. Chair.
Please.
I guess I'd be interested in knowing a little bit more, knowing at least if you've spoken to the legislators, maybe they include people in this room, who initially set up the Pain Management Commission, and I guess the point of that would be to know whether these changes are consistent with their vision for this commission.
Actually, Mr. Chair, Representative Cannon, the only one in this room that would remember any of that is Sandy. And we had Senator Joan Dukes, who is no longer a senator, that was involved in all of this. And there is a task force report that we found not too long ago that was just kind of out there that talked a lot about the task force and the task force recommendations for what the Pain Commission should do. And apparently in that task force recommendation, OHSU was quite involved, and they were suggesting that they help with a practice program. And since then, OHSU has completely withdrawn really anything that has to do with the Pain Commission. I'm not sure. It was a tough transition between the task force and the Pain Commission. And since then, we have no budget. We have no money. Unless an entity steps forward and says, we will do this practice program for you, we have no way to do something like that.
I think one of the originations of the program had to do with the Deaths with Dignity debate and the fact that one of the real problems in dying was the inability of the current therapy models to keep people pain-free and clear of mind. And one of the side effects of the Death with Dignity was to push a lot harder to get really good pain management models so that people could die on their own and comfortably and clear of mind. And I think it was pretty much tied together in that time frame. It required a complete change in the mind of clinicians, who in the old days the idea was that people ought to have only as much pain as they could just stand, to the transition to the notion that people ought to be pain-free. And that was it was basically a revolution in clinical medicine about that same time.
One question.
There are several questions here we have yet.
This is one that's kind of pressing. Ms. Hahn, has there been any discussion about adding reflexologists to this commission?
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, I realized in listening to the last discussion that we forgot licensed massage therapists and reflexologists. That could be the next bill.
But can we seriously, I'd like to follow up on that. Can we seriously tell why PTs and OTs need continuing education in pain management? I'm assuming you're talking about chronic pain management.
Mr. Chair, what I'm discovering in my role as chair of the Pain Commission and also my role as a member of the Pain Society, which is a multidisciplinary group, is that it's incredibly important for each of these members of the multidisciplinary team to understand what the other members are responsible for and what they can do. And without knowledge of the entire team and what's going on there, you are not really completely effective. I constantly see practitioners that are very well versed in what they do and have no clue of what the next pain practitioner member that does something completely different is able to do. And you have less than effective pain management when you have a team that doesn't understand all members.
So now you have a representative from each of these groups, and they may know, but what's to say that that means that all of their colleagues throughout the state would know?
Well, it's requiring them to take any education in pain management. That's why.
So it's one time, or is it ongoing?
Every year.
Mr. Chair, the requirement right now is just for seven hours, one time.
One time.
That was hard enough to pass at the time. You know, if we'd done this for every year or every other year, that would have been an amazing.
That's how Section 5 goes. Section 5 will require them, within 24 months.
Yes.
The new people.
Okay. I got it.
Okay.
Yes. Please, Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a quick question about the how many educational institutions are there for which you'll be reviewing curriculum?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bonamici, I'm not sure exactly how many there are. That'll be something that we get to figure out. That'll be interesting, yeah, to see how many are actually teaching what we consider health care and pain management.
Okay, so follow up, Mr. Chair. So this requires, it says you shall review the pain management curricula of educational institutes in the state that provide the education, but you don't know how many of those there are.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bonamici, that'll be part of our charge, is to find out who's out there, what they're teaching.
Thank you.
Which is, I think, probably a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think one of the issues besides the death of dignity in the state of Oregon is the fact that pain is now an issue that people sue on. And so it's a malpractice issue. And if you don't control my pain, then I'm going to sue you. And so it goes beyond just the borders of the state of Oregon. And because even my few years in healthcare, of course, I see it somewhat on the outside, is having to, you know, enforce the training requirements and et cetera. And the whole, it has been really a shift in thought on how you deal with pain and how it's documented. And I think we'll talk about it in 8A because I have several comments about that too. But this is not just an Oregon issue. This is a national issue.
I've never heard the comment on malpractice. That's very interesting.
Senator Flores?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hahn, excuse me, you indicated that the reason that you were deleting language that talked about a pain management program for providers, developing a pain management program for providers was because you have no funding and so you are basically a zero-sum game in your commission. So how are you going to be, number one, determining the nature and extent of all the education curriculum out there, and then making this review and assessment, and then providing the report? So how will that work?
Mr. Chair, Representative Flores, we are learning how to do surveys. And so we're very much, the education piece has just started, and we have a survey that we are developing to try to capture as many pain patients in the state as we can. And that's going to be the first measure of just actually looking at the outcome and seeing if pain patients from a survey now and maybe a survey 5 years from now can actually measure some improvement. And so instead of capturing the actual education and what we see there, looking at the final product and seeing if we are getting some improvement in pain management in the state through survey.
Please.
Well, if you're surveying patients, is that the same thing as the charge that you are inserting upon yourself to review the pain management curricula of educational institutions in this state?
Mr. Chair, Representative Flores, we are the ultimate end point for the Pain Commission is to look at what's going on in the state and improve pain management. And everything that we're doing, mandatory continuing education, looking at education in possibly in schools, is all to reach this end point. And we might look at if we had some short-term report of, well, we've looked at all these schools and it seems like they're doing well. If the end point of taking care of the patient more adequately than we are now is not looked at, then it's all for naught. So the important thing, I think, for the Pain Commission is to constantly have our eye on, is pain management improving in this state?
So last follow-up. So just to make sure I understood you correctly, you will not be doing an assessment of education curriculum for post-secondary education pain management courses. You're going to be surveying patients to see what the results of the treatments they receive are?
No, Mr. Chair, Representative Flores. We are going to be looking at it would be the healthcare professions. And so you're wondering if we're going to how we will know in the end if it's helping. Was that your original question?
No, my original question is, since you are a non-funded commission, how would you be going about, number one, determining the extent of the educational institutions that you will need to be surveyed, to be evaluating, and then set about reviewing the curricula of all of these institutions?
How are you going to do 4A is the question.
Okay, Mr. Chair, Representative Flores. We have 17 members that are all of different specialties, and it is our intent to use each one of these to be looking at their own specialty and looking at, let's say I'm a pharmacist, I would be contacting the Board of Pharmacy and looking at the curriculum that they have. And we're not going to be looking at it line by line and making sure that it says everything we want it to. We just want to know, how many hours in pain management are you teaching? I mean, there are some articles. No, I said I am a pharmacist.
No,
so
if you said you were going to be looking at the Board of Pharmacy.
No, I'm not looking at the Board of Pharmacy.
What will you be looking at?
I would be looking at the curriculum from the schools.
Schools,
yeah. And it's going to be something that's fairly simple. I would say it's not going to take an enormous number of hours because this will be our volunteer commission members that will be doing this. from each profession, each specialty, looking at their schools, their prospective schools, and just finding out, okay, how many hours are you teaching, and how many different things do you add palliative care, do you add a hospital, you know, all those kinds of things, and just to kind of give us an idea.
20 nursing program.
Yeah, so that would be something that we probably would have them just sending, kind of an overview of what they teach. Just make sure that it's there and that we feel that there's enough hours, you know, not just 2 hours in 4 years of teaching.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking at a different section of the bill. The part that, Section 5, that requires dentists, occupational therapists, and physical therapists, all of them, to take in the next 2 years a course, which I think you said, or maybe the bill says, is 7 hours approximately. But this will have a relatively large impact given the number of dentists, physical therapists, and occupational therapists. And do we have additional testimony, Mr. Chair? Because I guess I want to hear more about the need for this requirement. I understand it's the recommendation of the Pain Commission that this requirement be added, but I haven't heard a lot about why.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cannon, the Pain Commission has looked at the problem of undertreatment of pain in this state for 5 years. And we've had debate and testimony off and on why an occupational therapist doesn't know what a massage therapist knows, doesn't know what a chiropractor knows, doesn't know what when an acupuncturist is an appropriate member of a team and a primary care physician totally misses that. There are many gaps that we have discovered in practitioners not understanding their role as a multidisciplinary pain practitioner.
Representative Cannon, I think what I hear you saying is that I think we really need to hear from those professions before we move this. And what Alpabu is doing is closing this hearing and holding this over and see if we can get representatives from each of those three professions to.
Yeah, and I'm interested also in the Pain Commission's thinking with respect to this, and if there are any written documents that, granted on zero budget, you haven't been able to do much, but if there's any sort of written documents that you can provide with your conclusions around this issue, I'd be interested to see it. But thank you very much.
Comment, well, actually, kind of a question comment, I guess. every year, every 2 years, every licensing iteration, providers are required to have continuing education. So this isn't an additional requirement. This is just within your X number of hours this year, 7 hours of it's going to be pain. And you have to have a little certificate that says you've been through a certified pain management. So it's not.
I'd like to hear from the PT professionals to see whether they think that's the right 7 hours among whatever number of hours they have. It seems to me.
And the dentist.
Well, I think we can talk to the dentist, but I think we might understand why dentists need pain management. At least my dentist. My president could use some work.
No objection.
No, that's actually not true. But I really would like to hear from the profession and see if they feel this makes sense. So I'm going to close the public hearing on SB 879, and Sandy, what we schedule maybe next week, if that. Have you come from very far?
I come from Eugene. I take off from my practice at community pharmacy every time I come up here.
I'm sorry.
Maybe you don't have to come. Yeah,
maybe get somebody else from the commission. One of the other folks. All right. Let's open a public hearing on Senate Bill 880. We have somebody.
Kathy Horn.
Kathy again. Okay. Let's go.
I'm Kathy Horn, Chair of the Pain Commission. Senate Bill 880 is something that we have been urged to do by our. We have a kind of a
a guiding group at the Wisconsin Pain and Policy Studies at the University of Wisconsin. And they are trying to help us guide state policy in pain management. We have had an intractable pain act since sometime in the 90s.
95.
And it was the thing to do to try to protect doctors who were treating chronic pain with opioids, to protect them if there was some kind of pain that couldn't be treated in any other way, that they could allow the doctor to give opioids. It is now becoming apparent that having an intractable pain act is somewhat limiting, and that the word intractable is not appropriate and should be taken out, because there are many kinds of pain that are now treated chronically with opioids. And so what the word intractable is a problem. And so the Pain Commission had to discuss whether they were going to completely take the Intractable Pain Act out or to just pare it down and make it more of just a pain act. And so that's our attempt in Senate Bill 880, is to take the word intractable out to make it more appropriately representing what's going on and not make it a limiting language that the Wisconsin Pain and Policy Studies Group has told us. They're the group that that grades all the states every year. And when we started out, we had a C+, and we're just slowly working at trying to clean things up, clean our state policy and pain management. And we currently have a B+, and I think if we finally get this intractable word out, we'll have an A. And there are only two states in the country that have an A. And there are examples, I think I mentioned them here, that have already done this. Michigan, North Dakota, Rhode Island, and West Virginia have already done this.
And to include other professionals besides physicians.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, so then we cleaned. Yeah. So then we cleaned up the wording, and figured, okay, if we have nurse practitioners, physicians' assistants, also prescribing opioids, that we need to recognize that.
Mr. Chair.
Yes,
if I may.
Please.
I'm very supportive of this bill for two primary reasons. One is the fact that it's now healthcare providers, not physicians, because it wasn't until just a few years ago that we found out through a friend of ours that if you prescribe opioids for pain, intractable pain, that you had to have this contract with the provider. And we said, well, how are we supposed to know the law? Because it was on physicians and not nurse practitioners, and it was unbelievable that nurse practitioners in this case, practicing independently, were treated differently than it should have been about everybody. And my favorite section is the repealing ORS 677.485, which was an onerous requirement, and we never did quite figure out exactly what this meant. And it's a notification of patients that there are alternative methods of pain control, and that you've exhausted all those. And the bottom line is that 880, I think, is definitely a step in the right direction and reduces some bureaucracy.
That's good testimony.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's good testimony. I was complimenting you, Dr. Ripley.
Oh, okay.
That's very useful to hear. Yeah, I was trying to find out where that section was. The repeal is the very last line.
Last line on the bill.
It's also referenced in line 17 and 18 on page
4. On page what?
Page 4.
Mm-hmm. Good to have a lawyer around to help. Lawyer and a medical administrator, we got everything going here. Thank you, Representative Bonamici.
You're welcome, Mr. Chair.
Except, Mr. Chair, that I'm now going to have to go back and rewrite my policies to take this out.
Are you complaining, Representative?
Life is tough. I'm going to close the public hearing on
on Senate Bill 880 and open a work session on Senate Bill 880. And I'll take a motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I'll move that Senate Bill 880 be moved to the floor with a pass recommendation.
Is there any discussion of that motion?
Mr. Christian?
Mr. Chair, just a question or clarification. If I understand this correctly, it makes it, it sort of lowers the barrier for the physician's use or other practitioners' use of certain controlled substances in the treatment of pain. Is that an accurate thumbnail sketch?
Well, I'm not a provider, so I'm going to...
You got away too fast.
I'm sorry.
Lowers the barrier in that they don't have to have this written contract, or you're asking does it lower the barrier in any other way?
Yeah, I understand that it repeals that requirement for a contract, but lowers it in other ways too, I think.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ken, it increases the scope of what the Intractable Pain Act was wanting to do. It said that you would be protected as a provider for treating pain only if the patient had intractable pain. If we take the word intractable out, it's going to include other kinds of pain. So yeah, you're right. Which is the Pain Commission feels a very important thing. There are other pains than just intractable pain.
Sandy pointed out that there's no legal definition of pain. Is that a problem?
That's not a problem because apparently there is a definition when Charlie Cheeks wrote this. He had to decide whether to put the definition in there, and apparently it does appear somewhere else.
Okay.
Because we have you back up here, do you know what the issue was on the Senate side and why there were 6 no votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, I have no idea. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I guess I would assume the reason that this statute existed in the first place was to had to do with chemical dependency and the desire not to prescribe unnecessarily substances that could promote result in dependency on the part of the patient. I'm not hearing any testimony in opposition to this bill, so I don't want to make up arguments against it that are...
I think the real purpose, if I remember the situation at the time, was because physicians were afraid to give the proper doses of opiates.
Yes.
Because of BME policy. I mean, back to that old notion that you only give enough medication so that people can stand their pain. So this really required much higher doses of opiates, and I think physicians were just very reluctant to use the higher doses without some kind of protection.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, what they call a safe harbor legislation to make the provider feel more comfortable. Yeah.
We're going to make it the provider feel more comfortable in prescribing this because, again, they don't have to be worried about whether or not the pain is intractable. They just know that there's pain. It can be treated through these opioids. And therefore, they're going to enter the safe harbor and go ahead and do it. Yeah, I mean, it does raise the question in my mind of whether there is sort of patient risk here involved, that we shouldn't allow doctors. And again, without testimony in opposition, I'm not going to oppose this bill, but I would imagine there was a reason that we didn't want doctors to feel too overly comfortable prescribing pain relief, or maybe... You know, pain relief isn't absolutely necessary, and that the risks of using that form of relief are outweighed its potential benefits.
But so do I. We have 34 in front of us as well, I think.
May I comment on that? I look at it, and there's several avenues or approaches. One is the malpractice, is that it became or it has become popular to sue on the fact that you have not relieved my pain. And so that is an issue that is weighed into it. The fact that we have death with dignity in Oregon clearly is a piece of that. But with this whole notion that it's not about just controlling the pain to the point that someone isn't going to cause damage to themselves, is that we can relieve the pain, but the consequence is now we have people that are addicted to opioids, And then there are people that are going to abuse that system. And so the 34 plays right back into this whole argument. And I look at 34 as a very important piece of this legislation. Most providers do not provide opioids without a contract, a drug contract, for people that they know are going to be on this for an extended period of time. And so I think providers are very careful because they realize that there's risk in doing this. Would you agree?
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, yes, I do agree. And if you look at the whole thing together, we're trying to put together a whole package. We're trying to make it more comfortable for providers to treat pain, but then for those that, because we've increased the scope, we are trying to provide them a tool with 34 to make sure that we're not getting them into an area that makes them uncomfortable.
If I, one last question, was the issue of medical marijuana ever associated with this 880?
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, no.
Okay. Do we have a motion on this floor?
Yes.
Okay, we do.
Representative Maurer, put a motion on the table.
Is there other discussion? You call the roll, please.
Senator Barnes.
Aye.
Representative Rule.
Aye. Senate Bill 880A is on the way to the floor with a new pass recommendation. Do I have a volunteer to carry it?
Mr. Chair, I'll carry this one.
That'd be great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ron. Representative Maurer will carry it. And anything else to come before the committee? House Committee on Health Care is adjourned.